It's 7 minutes now past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, here this morning filling in for Joy Cardine. The recent announcement that the Kewaunee Power Station, a nuclear power plant, is going to be closing probably didn't come as a big surprise to those who follow the production of electricity closely. Falling prices for natural gas, coupled with the costs of running a single reactor, are just among the reasons the plant is being closed. This hour, we discuss how the process of closing a nuclear plant works, and we'll also be talking about what the future of energy production in Wisconsin will look like. With us this hour to discuss the topic is Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW Green Bay, and we'd like to hear from you, too. So what do you make of the closing of the Kewaunee nuclear plant, particularly if you live in that area? And how do you feel about the future of energy production in Wisconsin? Is there any particular kind of energy in which you think the state should be investing in? What kind of questions do you have about the shutdown and the decommissioning process? Give us a call with your questions and comments. Our number here is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also connect with us on email. That address is talk@wpr.org. And don't forget, you can also post comments to the Joy Cardine Show page, which you will find on Facebook. Professor Kraft, good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning.
Well, it's nice to have you along. Let's talk about the closing of the plant. Did it come as a surprise to people who watch these sorts of things?
Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, it's not a real surprise, partly because the Kewaunee plant is a relatively small one and has been in operation for some time. And the real determining factor seems to be the rapidly falling price of natural gas, which has been dropping the last several years. And for most of us, that's a good thing because it lowers our home heating bill and reduces energy costs in general. But for an older nuclear power plant, it wasn't such a good thing because the plant could no longer be competitive with, and that was the reason the Dominion decided that it would have to close the plant. It said it could not find a buyer after trying extensively to do so. So I guess for people who follow energy issues, it wasn't like it was at the top of the agenda of things we could expect, but on the other hand, it was also not a surprise. And I think over the next couple of decades, we're going to see many other nuclear power plants close as well for similar reasons.
Now, here in Wisconsin, what has the history of nuclear power been? We're familiar. We're talking about the Kewaunee plant. I remember the boiling water reactor over by Genoa, Point Beach, and so forth. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much it? Or am I missing
something?
Well,
no, we have a third. There are three plants currently in Wisconsin, the third being in the La Crosse area. So we rely to a modest degree on nuclear power in the state. And there's been opposition historically to expanding nuclear power, as there has been around the country, partly keyed to the issue of nuclear waste disposal. I think, as most listeners know, the federal government has yet to build a nuclear waste repository or any kind of centralized storage facility, and a number of states have either made it illegal to open new plants without such a federal plan, or at least have indicated a reluctance to do so. And nuclear power has not been expanding for the last 30 or 40 years. There are two plants under construction in Georgia, and those are the first that have been authorized since the 1970s. We've had a real turndown in reliance on nuclear power for lots of reasons.
Yeah, which is interesting because, just in terms of politics, in the last couple of years, we've heard about should we be lifting a nuclear moratorium, and all of a sudden it seems to be a moot point.
Well, and even the plea on the part of some that we should lift a moratorium, it's not so much really that there's been a moratorium. I think it's been that nuclear power plants are enormously expensive to build, especially these days. New plants would cost roughly $8 to $10 billion, depending on size. And the Kewaunee plant is a relatively small one, which makes it less efficient. And I think that's one reason why Dominion has not found any buyers. And as natural gas prices fall, this is again a kind of a barrier to construction of any new nuclear power plants because it would be even more difficult for them to operate competitively. Now, most people probably wouldn't be bothered by that, but I think it's important to note that the other way of generating electricity in Wisconsin and this part of the country is by burning coal. And coal is one of the dirtiest of fossil fuels. So in some ways, many analysts would say nuclear power may have an advantage over coal and natural gas an advantage a strong advantage over coal in terms of direct air pollution and toxic chemicals, but also in terms of greenhouse gas production. So the availability of natural gas at a lower price actually gives us a little bit of time, I guess, to come up with a variety of other sources, including renewable sources such as solar and wind. But those sources would take years before they could constitute the kind of baseload power that big nuclear plants or coal or natural gas plants provide.
You mentioned earlier the whole issue of nuclear waste. We've certainly seen that with the boiling water reactor near La Crosse. That was taken out of service, boy, I don't know what, 15 or 20 years ago. And the waste is still there, and they're just beginning the process now, as I understand it, of trying to do something more permanent with it. As we take a look at what's happening with the Kewaunee plant, how does the decommissioning process work? I mean, you don't just turn it off and walk away, I know that.
Well, no, you don't. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission retains control over the plant operations for a very long time. And as I understand it, the process can take decades to complete, and much depends on the decision of an individual plant. The lack of the availability of a federal nuclear waste repository or storage area will actually slow this down more, I think, than was anticipated. Now, the first step is that the plant would at some point be basically shut down. The fuel that's currently in the reactors would be transferred to water-cooled basins within the plant. Usually the fuel rods, the nuclear fuel itself, is kept in those basins for about 5 or 6 years to allow them to cool down. After that time, they will be transferred outside the plant to what's called dry cask storage, which are steel and concrete casks that sit outside the plant. Then at that point, my understanding is that each facility has decades to decide on how quickly it will dismantle the facility. But eventually, within about 6 decades at the outside, the plant has to be physically removed and the entire area decontaminated. And that means that a construction company would have to be hired to come in and dismantle the plant. It would be shipped typically out west for burial. So decommissioning doesn't mean, you know, you lock the door and walk away. It means physically removing the facility and taking special care, of course, for those parts of the facility that are contaminated. And then the waste would sit outside and be secure until such time as there is a federal facility to receive it. Now, each plant is supposed to have a plan and supposed to set aside money. And my understanding is the Kewaunee plant has about $500 million in reserve. The owners of the plant say that should be sufficient for the full decommissioning process. So it can take a long time. The money is supposed to be there. And eventually the plant will be physically gone and the entire area made available for some other purpose.
So in theory, the decommissioning of the plant itself is the responsibility of the plant's owners, but it's overseen by the NRC.
Yes, correct. Now, so the owners are supposed to have set aside money to take care of this. And one assumes that the NRC will, you know, keep tabs on this and make sure that there's a plan that is being developed. The facility is given time, I guess, and some leeway as to when it will actually begin the process and complete it. And it could be early or could be later on. And there would be some jobs created in the decommissioning process. But the current issue, I think, is that there are about 650 employees who will lose their job when the plant closes, some of whom will be kept on to move the fuel to the reactor pools and eventually move it outside. But this would be a fraction of the number currently employed there.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the future of energy production in Wisconsin this hour. 800-642-1234 if you would like to join in. Michael Kraft, you know, it wasn't so long ago that we were hearing about energy shortages in Wisconsin. You know, the summers would get hot and there'd be, you know, brownouts and that sort of thing. We don't seem to be seeing that all of a sudden. What sort of impact will this have on Wisconsin's overall energy production? What role does nuclear still play in this state?
Well, nuclear power has provided, I think, about 20% of electricity, and then both within Wisconsin and nationwide, nuclear is about 8% of total energy use. Natural gas in recent years has been about a quarter, coal about 30%, and oil use about 28%. But if we're talking about production of electricity, it's pretty much coal, natural gas, and nuclear. And so if nuclear diminishes, we're going to see more reliance on either coal or natural gas. And as we talked about earlier, mostly it's natural gas these days. And because of the economic downturn, I think we've been relatively lucky in not having a shortage of energy. And, of course, we have some increased development of, in this part of the country, of wind power, though not as much as many advocates of wind power would like. So I think part of the reason why we haven't seen too great an impact is that electricity is available from other parts of the country that have been building natural gas-fired facilities, which are the most efficient way to go. And apparently, Wisconsin Public Service and other electric power suppliers in the state have indicated they can manage without the plant by pulling from other sources in the region.
Michael Kraft is with us this hour, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW Green Bay. We're talking about energy production in Wisconsin. The Kewaunee Nuclear Plant recently announced it's going to be closing probably in the next year or so after not finding a buyer for the facility. What does the future of energy look like for Wisconsin? If you would like to join in, 800-642-1234 if you've got a question or a comment for our guest. Taking a look at Wisconsin weather for today, it's going to be sunny and cool. You can expect highs in the mid to upper 40s. Tonight, it's going to be clear and cold again, back down into the high 20s and low 30s around the state. Tomorrow, sunny and cool, highs in the 40s and lows in the 30s. I'm Gene Purcell, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 19 minutes now past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9 this morning with Kathleen Dunn, political writer Craig Gilbert will be joining Kathleen to talk about some of the latest news from the campaign trail. That's coming up after 9. This hour, we're talking about the future of energy production, specifically electric energy production in Wisconsin. Michael Kraft joins us, a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at UW Green Bay. And we're talking about this in the wake of the Kewaunee Nuclear Plant that is going to be closing. Owners announced that the plant will be closing and then starting the process of decommissioning within the next year or so. So what kind of questions does this raise about energy needs for Wisconsin and energy production? We'll be going to your calls in just a second. 800-642-1234 if you would like to join in. Michael Kraft, before we go to calls, though, you mentioned right before the break this idea that there's electricity available from elsewhere that can come into Wisconsin. Has this been a situation that's been changing over the years, or is this just a case of energy usage is not where folks predicted it to be, and so we have other sources to draw from?
Well, I think there's always been some flexibility in terms of where we draw electricity from. Obviously, during emergencies, we can draw well outside the region. And I think we have nationwide been relying much more heavily, as I noted, on natural gas as prices have fallen. That really seems to be the key motivating reason to close down this relatively old and inefficient power plant. So other utilities have been building, including in Wisconsin, new coal-fired power plants. On the West Coast, that's much more common to rely on natural gas, and in the Northwest, rely on hydroelectric power. So this does vary quite a bit around the country. The Midwest, in particular, has been pretty heavily reliant on coal. And I think most people would probably agree, as we back away from reliance on coal energy, that would be probably a good thing. But as I understand it, the electric utilities have some flexibility about where they buy their power from, and that was part of the problem that Dominion faced, that they could not sign a new contract. And these are very long-term contracts nuclear power plants signed. They were not able to sign a contract with the energy companies because those companies thought they could get a better deal elsewhere.
You know, you brought up the issue of coal, and it wasn't so long ago that coal plants would be running, and then it would the utilities would only use natural gas plants because they were so much more expensive when they absolutely had to. And now you've seen that shift, and it seems to me as an outsider that that's happened very, very quickly. Is there any concern on the part of people who watch the industry that it could flip the other way very quickly as well, that those natural gas prices could all of a sudden head back up in the other direction?
Well, I guess that's always a possibility, but the trend has really been pretty strong toward falling natural gas prices, and that's because we keep expanding exploration for natural gas. So many listeners are familiar with natural gas fracking. This mm-hmm. is using water and sand and chemicals to pull natural gas out of rock formations deep in the earth. And this has been rapidly expanding across the country. And the result has been we have a glut of natural gas now. And in some ways, that will help many people keep down home heating bills this winter. But that also hurts the reliance on other sources. Right now, as I understand it, natural gas is so cheap that coal is not competitive either. And the country is actually beginning to export coal to Asia, to China and other countries, because there's so little demand in the United States. And then there's some additional regulations, of course, on coal-fired power plants that are beginning to kick into effect, whereas natural gas is viewed as a relatively clean source. So in the larger scheme of things, I don't know if this means the demise of nuclear power nationwide, because we're looking at a very unusual plant. It's quite an old plant. It's very small by contemporary standards, and it was just not able to be competitive in this environment. But I wouldn't be surprised that the falling price of natural gas, or even if the prices hold stable, will not be very good news for either nuclear plants or coal-based plants, because they will not be as competitive as they used to be.
Yeah, you bring up the whole efficiency factor there, and it's interesting because Point Beach is just up the road, you know, like 8 or 10 miles from Kewaunee. Kind of the same vintage, but the two reactors, and as I understand it, that might be enough to tip the balance in terms of efficiency of operations.
Yes, it should be. Plus, Point Beach has a long-term contract, so I guess it's set for a while. And, you know, most of these nuclear power plants date back to the late 1960s or early 1970s, and they can have a license to continue production renewed, but the reality is they're still old facilities. And the owners indicated, by the way, that the reason for closing really had to do with the inefficiency of the plant and not being able to find a buyer, not with new federal regulations. There are some new federal regulations on nuclear plants now taking effect in the wake of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, but those should be relatively modest in cost, so that was not the factor. It really is, I think, that this is an unusual plant that could not find a buyer, in part because there were no long-term contracts to assure its future.
Let's go to the phones right now, and Rich joins us. Looks like he is from Genoa. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My understanding is that the federal government has been collecting fees from the nuclear industry, in particular the nuclear power plants, to deal with high-level radioactive waste, and they had been exploring this for literally decades. And if you could correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is the president, while he said he is in favor of nuclear being part of the mix, has cut the funding for the Yucca Mountain operation, exploration, investigation, and for dealing with high-level radioactive waste, which is currently being stored on-site at most of the reactors, not just the two in Wisconsin, but the five surrounding the Chicagoland area. It pretty much makes it so that that fuel goes nowhere until the federal government has decided what to do. And with the federal government and President Obama cutting the funding to zero, that's just kind of backing the whole system up. Do I have any of that correct? Do you know?
Yeah, no, you have most of it correct. For years, since adoption of the Nuclear Waste Power Act in 1982, and that act was revised in 87, it was 87 that said we're going to look at only one site in the country, and that's Yucca Mountain, Nevada. The problem was, after years and years of investigation and spending about $10 billion, there were a lot of questions about the Yucca Mountain site that made it problematic to go forward. And President Obama set up a Blue Ribbon Commission to review the entire state of federal policy on nuclear waste, and there were some recommendations issued just about a year ago on how to move forward, and this is something that Congress and the President will have to deal with. In the meantime, you're quite correct. There is no centralized storage facility and no underground repository. Each nuclear plant takes care of its own nuclear waste, stores it on-site, and that can be done safely for a lot of years. But the plants have been paying fees all this time that are supposed to fund the construction operation of a national nuclear waste repository. But it's going to be decades yet before we have such a facility. So we really are looking at keeping the waste at each plant or building a temporary federal storage facility to basically keep the stuff above ground for a long time.
You know, and this always turns into a difficult conversation to have because you are talking decades. I mean, when you start talking about Yucca Mountain and going back to the 80s and you're talking, you know, six decades to decommission the plant, it's hard for people to, you know, and legislators and politicians and everybody else to wrap their heads around this.
Right. Well, if you want to wrap your hands around something even more astonishing, when you finally build a nuclear waste repository, this is a deep geological repository, the waste has to remain in there for essentially 100,000 years or longer. And that's the problem, I think, in finding a suitable site, because you have to be able to what's called characterize the risk of the site, for example, leakage into groundwater, and do so convincingly for tens of thousands of years. And that's very hard to do. So locating a facility, whether it be at Yucca Mountain or anywhere else in the country, and at one point Wisconsin was a site under consideration for a national repository, it's an extraordinarily difficult process. So on-site storage or a centralized storage facility is certainly safe and not so expensive that it can't be relied on for a lot of years. I co-edited a book on nuclear waste back in the early 90s, and our view at that time was that there's no reason why we can't keep the waste in such storage facilities for 100 years and hope that there'd be some technological breakthroughs that would give us some alternatives. So I'm not worried that Yucca Mountain's not going forward. The President's Blue Ribbon Commission report is available online, and there are many recommendations there for the President and Congress to consider, and I'm hopeful that once we're past the election, this will be one of many issues that doesn't get a lot of attention but will have to be resolved in the next few years.
We're talking with Michael Kraft this hour, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW Green Bay, in the wake of announcement last week that the Kewaunee Nuclear Power Plant is going to be closing within the next year. We've been talking about what happens when that plant actually closes, and then what the energy future of Wisconsin, and I guess the nation along with it, looks like. If you'd like to join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardigan this morning, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 25 minutes now before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm here this morning filling in for Joy Cardine. We are talking about the future of energy in Wisconsin. A week or so ago, the Kewaunee Nuclear Plant, there was an announcement there that that plant is going to be closing within the next year, and the process of decommissioning that power plant is going to begin and will take place over the next few decades. What does that decommissioning mean for energy production in Wisconsin? What should we be thinking about as we move forward? Michael Kraft is with us, a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at UW Green Bay, helping to explain some of the questions we've got. If you'd like to join in, 800-642-1234 is how you can do that. Michael Kraft, before the break, you were talking a little bit about this Blue Ribbon Committee that had been in place regarding nuclear energy, but it brought to mind for me the idea of an overall energy policy from the federal government, or maybe more accurately, the lack of one, because I think that's been a criticism of not just the Obama administration, but many administrations for the past couple decades.
Well, yes, we have, I used to say we have no real comprehensive U.S. national energy policy. We have lots of policies dealing with particular energy sources. So of late, we have had some tax benefits for building wind turbines and for solar energy panels, and historically we have heavily subsidized coal, oil, and natural gas, and of course nuclear power. But we've approached the subject in terms of discrete energy sources and treated each one separately. And I think what many experts would love to see is a long-term comprehensive view of where we ought to be going on a national basis and on a state basis. How much emphasis should we place on renewable sources? How should we redirect all the current subsidies we have to create something that would be either more reliable or safer or greener in terms of greenhouse gas production? And that's a conversation this country and the state really needs to have. And I think we're past the time where we need to focus on single energy sources and and a short-term perspective on each of those sources.
We heard from Phil Montgomery. He's the chair of the State Public Service Commission, and he says he's optimistic that Wisconsin's energy future is a bright one because of the diversified portfolio of investments here in the state: coal, nuclear, natural gas, hydro, biomass, wind, and solar. Does he have it right? I mean, do we have that diversified portfolio, and does that help us in terms of what the future looks like for the state?
Well, it is diversified, but like the rest of the country, we still rely very heavily on fossil fuels for our energy sources, and there are many reasons, environmental effects and greenhouse gas production among them, that I think we really need to think long-term about moving away from our heavy reliance on fossil fuels, that'd be coal, oil, and natural gas, to building more reliance on renewable sources. And I think, as most listeners know, we've had some battles in this state over wind power and the siting requirements, and that has not made it easy to expand wind power in the state of Wisconsin or nationwide. And now the favorable tax credits for wind power are set to expire in December, at the end of December, and the federal government has yet to renew those. So I think that this is not the right way to approach the development of energy sources. We really can't make it, you know, credits for 1 year that expire in another year. Business people trying to build wind power facilities, for example, can't make decisions based on those kind of short-term policies. What we need is a longer-term perspective to broadly develop many different sources. I think a diversified set of energy sources is very much in our interest, but over time we also need to shift away from traditional sources to sources that will be better in many respects, better in the long run.
Better than just taking a look at price, in other words.
Well, price is only one factor. I mean, when we talk about energy, and I understand when you the Kewaunee plant, for example, is being closed down largely because of non-competitive pricing of nuclear power. But an advantage of nuclear power is, of course, it's a cleaner source of energy than burning fossil fuels. For many people, health risks are of consideration, and coal-fired power plants have a disadvantage in terms of the production of, you know, certain toxic chemicals such as mercury that may wind up in the Great Lakes, and air pollution that affects people with, particularly people with asthma and other conditions. So there are a lot of trade-offs we face, and if we were to develop a statewide comprehensive energy policy, it would look at a variety of factors: cost, availability, health risks, environmental impacts, and we really need to do that in a in a comprehensive way, not just look at each source and talk about whether it should be expanded or not, but to compare across the different sources and decide what is best for the state. And the availability of the sources and their efficiency and their pricing is really only one consideration.
800-642-1234. Let's go to listeners right now, and Tony is with us from Woodruff. Hi, Tony.
My question is this. A number of times a gentleman has referred to the falling of natural gas prices. I'd like to know where he gets his information from, since my home is heated by natural gas and the prices continue to go up, not down. That's one factor that I would like to know. The other one is, should more consideration be taken of the environmental impacts that nuclear power plants have, as well as the extraction of natural gas by this fracking that they do? Okay. Should there not be more emphasis put on wind power and solar?
Tony, thanks for the call. Let's put it to our guest, Michael Kraft. Where would you like to start with the environmental stuff?
Let me start with the second one, since I was just talking about it. As I think I was saying, I think rather than look at each source, I think we need to look across sources. And obviously, the cost is one factor. The environmental impact is another. And I think over time, we really do need to move away from all fossil fuels. But that I'm speaking of a 40 or 50-year time span, because renewable sources are not large enough yet to take over. And this is true not only in Wisconsin, but nationwide and globally. That's probably not going to happen real fast, because we still rely very heavily on coal power all across the world. And as I mentioned, the U.S. is now exporting our coal to China, which is exacerbating the reliance on coal there. So environmental impacts there, very definitely, and environmental impacts of all sources. Nuclear power has a relatively low environmental impact compared to coal. On the other hand, as I mentioned, any kind of nuclear waste storage facilities does raise questions about environmental and health impacts in the long term. As far as the first question Tony raised about natural gas prices, that's certainly my understanding, and every article I've read about the closing of the Kewaunee plant cites that as the major factor. Now, but what may be happening, however, is depending on where you're located, the local utility may not have, depending on how it signed contracts, and these are very long-term contracts, the falling price of natural gas may not immediately impact the price that you pay. Over time, as those contracts are renewed, I think we'll see falling prices. In my own area, I think that we haven't seen so much falling prices, but we have not had increasing prices either. But eventually, as these contracts, because they span years, I think the nationwide reduction in the cost of natural gas will produce lower prices. But as Tony also said on the second point, extracting natural gas is not free of environmental impacts. And at some point, we may see enough concern about the impacts of fracking of natural gas that development slows down or halts.
As we look around, not just the country, I mean, we've been talking a lot about energy policy and what some of the conversations that you would like to see taking place as we move forward in the future. Are there places in the world, are there other countries that are having conversations that you can point to and say,
Oh, yeah. You
know, we ought to have a conversation like that?
Yes, Germany is one. Germany is phasing out all nuclear power plants and is pushing heavily for renewable sources of solar and wind. All over Northern Europe in particular, you're seeing wind turbines placed off the coast. And as I understand it, Wisconsin certainly could explore that option. That is to say, large wind turbines could be placed in the shallow waters off the shores of Lake Michigan to generate energy. California for years has relied heavily on natural gas rather than coal, and I think it's pretty safe to say nuclear power is not going to see an expansion in that state. Other states have relied heavily on offshore oil production, but as we saw with the Deepwater Horizon spill, that's not without environmental risks either. So from many perspectives, what we want is a diversified set of energy sources. That way, if any particular source develops problems, if prices go up, if access is limited, if environmental impacts increase, then we can juggle the mix a bit to make sure we're at an optimum level. And as I said, over time, and I know not every listener is concerned about climate change and the release of greenhouse gases, but most professionals are. And over time, we really need to begin a serious shift away from reliance on particularly the dirtiest of the fossil fuels. So I'm not one who would grieve over the demise of coal-fired power plants. And I think we're going to see that with new federal regulations that will make it very hard to build new coal-fired plants that meet greenhouse gas limitations. So what we need to do at the state level is to start, I think, increasing support in many ways for renewable sources. Biofuels in the state of Wisconsin relying on agricultural waste and wind power are two that could clearly be supported if the state were serious about doing that.
You know, and on the individual level, we had a caller who couldn't stand the line but was wondering about moves towards residential energy efficiency, you know, people buying fluorescent bulbs and that sort of thing. Has that made a difference in this discussion?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Some states, again, have done better at this than others, I think, through public education campaigns and tax credits, but it's in everybody's interest. And the last caller noted particularly that he hasn't seen his energy bills for heating go down. But this is something that all of us can deal with. That is to say, you can replace old windows or at least caulk them or seal them in some ways as winter approaches. You can add more insulation to the attic. If you're building a new home or remodeling, you can think of serious ways of improving energy efficiency with appliances and with a modern heating and cooling system that would be much more efficient than an older one. So it's in everybody's interest to try to save energy. That's the cheapest way to produce new energy, you could say, is not to waste the energy we're already producing. So energy conservation and efficiency, as we approach winter, are, for example, turning down thermostats a little bit and wearing sweaters or otherwise getting by in a slightly cooler environment would help save people a lot of money, even if energy prices do not change. So there's a lot we can do.
Well, Michael Kraft, on that note, we've got to leave it there, but thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
Appreciate your time. Michael Kraft has been with us for the past 50 minutes or so talking about energy production in Wisconsin in the wake of the announcement that the Kewaunee Nuclear Plant is going to be closing with in the next year and starting that process of decommissioning. He is a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at UW-Green Bay. Taking a look at Wisconsin weather for today, it is going to be sunny and it's going to be cool too. Expect highs in the mid to upper 40s. Tonight clear and it's going to be cold again. Back down into the high 20s and low 30s around the state. For tomorrow, sunny and cool with highs in the 40s and lows in the 30s. The extended forecast Wednesday through Friday calls for sunny and cool conditions. Highs will be in the mid to upper 40s, lows down into the 20s and 30s. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ten minutes before seven, it is the wake-up call for a Monday morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This morning, we're taking a look at the open enrollment period for Medicare during this morning's wake-up call. Just like most insurance plans, there is an open enrollment period when you can move from one plan to another. Our guest during the next few minutes says there are a few things that you'll want to know about. Holland Kennan joins us for the next few minutes, lead Dane County Benefit Specialist with the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups. And good morning, Holland Kennan. Good to have you along.
Good morning, Gene. How are you?
Well, it's Monday. It's 10 minutes to 7, and I'm awake. So
yes, indeed.
That's how I'm doing. It's actually going so far, pretty well so far. And we want to talk about this because this, you know, I had no idea, I'll be blunt, I had no idea that there was open enrollment for Medicare. I thought it was just sort of there all the time, and you know, you'd make changes as necessary. And I find out it's an awful lot like regular insurance in that regard.
It is indeed, and particularly with the Medicare Part D plan, there is an open enrollment period for people who already have Medicare Part D, and that runs from October 15th through December 7th every year.
So is this, is my ignorance of this something that you run into a lot?
Oh, yes, all the time. And people get it confused with Medicare supplement plans, which you can enroll in any time of year, although people may be subject to underwriting. And so there are so many parts to Medicare that people get it confused with when can they enroll and when can they disenroll and what's the impact with all of that. So very common indeed.
So what do people have to know? You said it's open, the open enrollment is open until December 7th, so there's a little bit of time here.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone is, you know, in Medicare right now, they've got a plan, what if they like it? Do they need to do anything?
Well, if they like their plan, they can stay in their plan, but we do encourage people to contact us or one of several resources around the state to check to make sure that they're getting the best value for the money. Many people statistically get into a plan and stay with it and don't check out other options to see if they could get a better deal. So we recommend that they do that just to make sure that they are their formulary, in other words, the drugs that they're taking, are still being covered and that they're getting the best value for the money. Sometimes they can save a lot of money by switching plans.
And obviously, if you don't like your plan, now is the time to start taking a look around for something that'll meet your needs.
Absolutely. And for people who are in the Medicare Advantage plans, the ones that have both health care and drug plans, they have a slightly longer enrollment period, which runs, it begins now, but they can go all the way till February 14th. To enroll and disenroll. And they should, you know, if they're in one of those, they should probably check out their annual enrollment period a little more closely to make sure that they know what they're doing, particularly if they're thinking of disenrolling from a Medicare Advantage plan and enrolling in just a plain Part D plan. So there are some overlaps there that are important.
So any differences in Medicare rules, regulations, or benefits this year that people who are enrolled need to know about?
There are a couple. There are about the same number of plans. For people who are in the HealthNet Orange and CCRX plans.
Wow, I don't even know what you just said.
I know. These are two insurance plans, and people who are in those plans will know what's happening. They have been informed that they have been transferred over to SilverScript. This is one of those things where one company buys out another, and so they've been transferred over into the SilverScript plan, and they are going to find that they have a letter that says that. And so if they don't want to be in those plans, they're going to need to check out their options, or they will find themselves, they'll still have coverage, but they're going to find themselves in a brand new plan. So that's one of them. Another good news is that under the Affordable Care Act, also commonly known as Obamacare, people will be paying even less this year than they did last year for their generic and brand name medications in the donut hole. Their costs will drop to 47.5% for brand names, and down to, they'll be paying, what is their number for? I think it's 79% for generics. So that's good news. So they're going to be paying even less there. So we're seeing prices drop, which is very, very good news.
And I heard you mention the donut hole, which was, you know, topic of much, much discussion a year or two or three ago. Is that still a big thing that people have to think about?
It's still something to be aware of, because different plans will offer generics or some brand names in the donut hole. But by 2020, it will still exist, but people will pay 25% in that donut hole. So we're seeing it become less a concern than it was before. That's, you know, it still exists, but it's becoming less of a concern. But people should still check out their plans to make sure that they're getting coverage. The deductible has gone from $320 only to $325, so that's also good news. And the premiums are up somewhat, but not much. So it's going to feel like a fairly stable year in terms of what people had last year, and they may actually see that they're saving some money.
And that is good news, but at the same time, if somebody is just listening to this program and they've never thought about their Medicare coverage before, they may be baffled by some of the things you're saying. So where can they go? I mean, do they need to talk to somebody like you, or is there a good website somewhere where you can get, you know, relatively clear, straightforward information, or are you going to be having to wade through stuff regardless?
Well, there is some wading. I would say the first thing to do is to put all those lovely advertisements aside. And if you are a computer savvy person, you can go to www.medicare.org. And the first thing that will come up says find a drug and health plan. And if you're fairly, you know, it's fairly straightforward. There is a plan finder that leads you through where you enter your drugs, your zip code, and whether you have what's called extra help or not. And you choose your pharmacy, and it will come up with a list of drugs in cost order. If a person is in Dane County and over age 60, they can contact the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups at 608-224-0606, and there's a choice for a benefits specialist, and my colleague or I will assist them. If they statewide, they can contact the Wisconsin Medigap Prescription Drug Helpline at 1-855-677-2783, which is also 1-855-67-PART-D for people who like using those words. They can contact Medicare directly at 1-800-Medicare.gov, or if they are under age 60, they can contact the Disability Drug Benefit Helpline at 1-800-926-4862. And those are some resources that they can use to contact people who will actually walk them through their Medicare Part D and Medicare Advantage options, so that they can, again, get the best value for the money, make sure their drugs are covered, so that this is something that they're not going to have to worry about in terms of their medical care.
All right. Well, Holland Kennan, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Gene. It's been a pleasure.
Holland Kennan has been with us, lead Dane County Benefit Specialist with the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups. You heard a lot of phone numbers and websites there. We'll get those posted to our website and to our Facebook page, so you can look them up at your leisure if you would like. This hour was produced by Bill Martins. We had on-air production by Cynthia Schuster, and we had some direction from Amanda Magnus. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.